Looks a whole lot different than did the last time I was here. The hall looks really nice. It's a joy to be here with you again. I'd like to read in the book of Psalms, please, 132, Psalms 132. Let's read from verse 1. Lord, remember David and all his afflictions, how he swore unto the Lord and vowed unto the mighty God of Jacob, surely I will not come into the tabernacle of my house, nor go up into my bed. I will not give sleep to my eyes or slumber to my eyelids. Until I find out a place for the Lord, a habitation for the mighty God of Jacob, lo, we hear of it in Epaphrodah. We found it in the fields of the wood. We will go into his tabernacle. We will worship at his footstool. Arise, O Lord, into thy rest, thou and the ark of thy strength. Let thy priests be clothed with righteousness, and let thy saints shout for joy. For thy servant David's sake, turn not away the face of thine anointed. The Lord has sworn in truth unto David, he will not turn from it. For the fruit of thy body will I set upon thy throne. If thy children will keep my covenant and my testimony that I shall teach them, their children shall also sit upon thy throne forevermore. For the Lord hath chosen Zion. He hath desired it for his habitation. This is my rest forever. Here will I dwell, for I have desired it. I will abundantly bless her provision. I will satisfy her poor with bread. I will also clothe her priests with salvation, and her saints will shout aloud for joy. There will I make the horn of David to bud. I have ordained a lamp for my anointed. His enemies will I clothe with shame, but upon himself shall his crown flourish. God will bless thee what we listen to in the reading of his word together right now. So, 1 Samuel chapter 4, you find a devastating event that took place in the nation of Israel. They had been sinning, they had been turning away from God time and time again. It was during the time of the judges. Everyone was doing that which was right in their own eyes. The time came in chapter 4, that the Philistines came and they were going to make war against the children of Israel. The children of Israel were bracing themselves, they were preparing, and they went up to battle, and there was a great slaughter. They withdrew, and they gathered together and took counsel to see what they should do. And they thought, well, let's get the Ark of the Lord and bring it into the battle. And that will make a difference. And they brought the Ark of the Lord in. But it didn't make a difference. There were more slaughtered in the second phase of the battle than there were in the first. And worst of all, the Ark of the Lord was captured and taken by the Philistines. What devastation! The people couldn't understand it. But you know, to them, that ark was no more than just a sort of a religious symbol. It was a symbol that lost its meaning because the Lord wasn't with them anymore. And if you go through that chapter in 1 Samuel chapter 4, I think it's five times, it states, the ark of the Lord was taken. The ark of the Lord was taken. And when the news came to Eli, who's sitting at the gate waiting for, hoping to hear that there was going to be a victory. And that runner came running in. He kind of just ran right past Eli. And then he came back to where Eli was, and he told Eli what had happened, that the ark of the Lord had been taken. And Eli, in sorrow of heart, fell off the little stool where he's sitting, and he broke his neck and died. And Eli's daughter-in-law was giving birth at that time. And she probably was, she was married to a very ungodly man. Very ungodly man. But it seems like she must have had at least a little bit of the fear of God in her. And as she was dying, giving birth to that child, she named that child Ichabod. The glory of the Lord has departed. And the Philistines took that ark, marching back to their lands, carrying it upon their shoulder, a symbol of triumph, of victory. And to their minds, they've won over the God of Israel. And they brought, so I know, maybe I think it's about a 70-mile march going from place to place and celebrating all the way down to, they get to the place called Ashdod. And they bring the ark of God in, and they put it before, at the feet of Dagon, triumphing over their victory. The next morning when they came in, Dagon was laying flat on the floor. They uprighted him. What kind of God is it that needs to be uprighted? But anyway, they uprighted him. The next day they came in, the priest did. And this time he's not only on the floor, but his hands and his feet, or his head is broken. And it seems to me like it's just shattered all over the floor from the reading of it. And you know what the Philistines learned? That maybe God's people were defeated, but God wasn't defeated. God was still upon the throne, and he would have no other gods before him. And I think of it sometimes, sometimes when we get a little bit discouraged and maybe find ourselves leaving the path that we should go. And we see something like the Israelites saw. And as they watched that ark being carried on the shoulders of those Philistines, and it went over a hill, I don't know, but there it was. They got their last glimpse of it. And as they saw it go, and with that ark went their faith. With that ark, the going of it, when all their hopes had been shattered, everything was crushed. This was the end, as far as they were concerned. But again, what they had to learn was this. They were defeated because of their own sinful ways, but their God was not defeated. And if you follow along in chapter 5 of 1 Samuel, you'll see that it went from Ashdod down to Gath, and from Gath to, what was the next one? I can't remember. Ekron. Went to Ekron. And each time when they took the Ark of God and they placed it in a place for 7 months, the matter just got worse and worse. The problems became greater and greater, and the infirmities got more intense. Things were bad. And finally they took the Ark and they put it on that cart, that new cart. The cows took it back to the land of Israel. And you know some of the stories, some of the people looked into the ark and there was another great slaughter. But what I want to get to this, the ark was finally taken to a place. And there it sat, maybe for 70 to 100 years. Saul was king on the throne. Saul didn't have any respect or any desire. He didn't have any interest in the ark of God. But there was a young man who had a deep interest in the ark of God. His name was David. And as David woke up morning after morning, he was saying, Lord, in verse 1 that we read together, remember David and all his affliction. What was his affliction? I believe his affliction was this, that he was missing the ark of God. He was missing the sense of the presence of God with his people. His heart was yearning, longing. The emptiness was overbearing. And he says in verse 3, in verse 4, I will not. What is he doing? He is saying, there's my sleep, my home, my bed, no matter what it is, that's all secondary. The most important thing in my heart and my mind right now is the ark of the Lord. I want to know something of his presence with us. And as we heard it already in ministry this evening, that is exactly what we want in a conference like this. We want to hear his voice. We want to have a true sense of his presence with us. And I am sure that there has been much prayer that has gone into this conference. I'm sure there's been much study on the part of my brethren on how to prepare for this conference. I'm sure that God has put it upon the hearts of all of us. And our desire is, Lord, as Samuel said earlier, speak, for thy servant heareth. Actually, Samuel didn't say Lord, but anyway, speak, for thy servant heareth. That's the desire of David. So he hears in verse 5, until I find out a place for the Lord, a habitation for the mighty God of Jacob. See, that's what's priority in his life right now. God's house. And we would say in our language today, God's assembly. More important than anything else. And then he hears. He reflects on that story that I just told you. And he says, we heard of it at Ephrathah. We found it in the fields of the woods, of the wood. You see where that ark was taken? Was in the wooded area, up in the mountains, I understand. And it was left in a house. And I don't have the name of the man right in front of me right now, but he was left in this man's house for all these years in the woods. And it seems like there wasn't anybody really interested. The way things were going in the nation, things were not going good. The leader, he was an ungodly man. But in the midst of it all, there was a young man. And he wanted to put God first. And he wanted to put the things of God first. You know, when God saw that response in David's heart, when he says in verse 7, we will go into his tabernacle, we will worship at his footstool. And he says, arise, O Lord, unto thy rest, thou in the ark of thy strength. And you know that Lord begins to respond to David. He says to him, in verse 13, he begins at verse 10 actually, but at verse 13, the Lord has chosen Zion. He hath desired it for his habitation. You know, Zion speaks to us, especially in the book of Psalms. You go through it and you come across that word Zion. It's really talking of Jerusalem. But the idea is for you and me, all that God did for Zion is what he, in the Old Testament, is what he desires to do for the assemblies in the New Testament. And he's saying here, he said, the Lord hath chosen Zion. He hath desired it for his habitation. You see, when we come to this place, the assembly, we come not because, hopefully anyway, because this is the annual conference, and that's all it is to us. We have come, I trust, with a desire to be in the presence of God, to be fed, to be taught, to learn, to be corrected, to be encouraged. Whatever we need, we come with these desires in our hearts. But if we come with these desires in our hearts, it's interesting that he hath desired it for his habitation. You see, all of us together, desiring this place, loving the assembly, appreciating the assembly for all it is to us. the best that we can have in our hearts is just a fragment of the desire that God has for the assembly. God loves the assembly far more than all of us will, or any of us, or all of us together. It's His desire. It's the desire of His habitation. And then He says in verse 14, "This is my rest." What is the assembly? I know when we are going through the normal assembly meetings, I don't know when you have your weeknight meeting, let's say it's Wednesday, whatever it is, then you have the Lord's Day and you have some outreach works going on here, which I've heard about. It's great. Appreciate it. You know, but when we come, we've been out in the world. We're in the workforce. We're going to school. Young children, you go to school there, and you're around your friends. Teenagers around their friends, and you know you're hearing. Your mind is being bombarded with bad words, scoffing about the things of God. You go to school and they try to tell you that you came from grime and slime and you're nothing. You don't have to give account to God. And you're being ambushed from every side. From a world that's riddled with sin and corrupt and evil from every side. And then you look forward to that Wednesday night meeting. And you're going to be there because you want to be there. And you come in, yes, you're wounded, you're bruised physically, not physically, spiritually. Your emotions have been battered because of the world. How wonderful is to slip in one of these benches and find a place of rest. A place where your heart can commune with God. And you can come here and become and sense the rest of being in God's presence. And from that rest, be refreshed in your own heart and soul. I don't know about you, but I look forward to the assembly meetings. I really do. Because it's one thing to be home and reading your Bible and studying it as we've been exhorted already to do today. And that's wonderful. Do it. But there's nothing more refreshing to me than to be in the presence of God's people with knowing that my Lord is here. And what does He call it? He says, "This is my rest." And if it's His rest, oh, I tell you, it becomes my rest too, doesn't it? It's a place where I can find that restoration in my soul. And He says, "Here will I dwell, for I have desired it." We saw David's desire for it in the first part of the chapter. Now we find the Lord's desire for His assembly, for His dwelling place. But then He goes on, He says, "I will abundantly bless her provision." You know, if He would have said, "I will bless her provision," that would have been good. And you and I would appreciate that. But he doesn't say that, does he? He says, "I will abundantly." The storehouses of our God can never go empty. You say, well, listen, you know, when you think of all the Old Testament saints that have leaned upon God and they trusted the Lord and through all the difficulties of life, He has sustained them. He has poured in the help that they need, the grace that they need. He supplied them with everything that they needed so that they could make it through to the next day and on all the way through life. We've been hearing about Paul and how Paul, his lifestyle and how invigorating it was, how energetic it was, how full it was, and how he was drawing constantly on the supply of his God to meet his need, whether it be in a jail cell, whether it be on a ship that was torn to pieces, or whether it be in an assembly. Constantly drawing from the supply of God. And you say, well, how about us in the 21st century? Has it gone dry? Is there still some left? Ah, yes. His supply is as infinite as He is. And He is able to, in a conference like this, our brethren, let it get a hold of us right now. He is able to abundantly bless this conference and meet every single need. And those who will stand here will have no idea what your needs are. But He does. And He was willing to abundantly bless her provision. And if He is abundantly a blessing, then what's the results? He says, I will satisfy her poor with bread. Satisfy. What an awful thing it would be. All the expense, all the exercise, all that has gone into this conference of 2017 in Winnipeg. And if we should go out on Sunday night dissatisfied, or we should go out Sunday night feeling that it didn't reach me, it didn't touch me, that'd be a desperate thing, wouldn't it? It should never be that way. Not only on a conference, every meeting of the assembly. Because He is willing. He says, I will satisfy her. I wonder where I find my satisfaction. I trust that this weekend we will find our total satisfaction with her bread. He says, I will satisfy her poor with bread. And I tell you, I don't know how you folks feel. You're a little higher north than we are, but where we come from, sometimes we feel pretty poor spiritually. What a wonderful thing would be today, this conference, if we go away satisfied, full. Spiritually speaking, so full that we go out of here with this desire in my heart. I don't care what the world has to offer to me. It doesn't mean anything to me now. I am full. I'm satisfied. And I want to live on the good of that for days to go, days from now, weeks from now, months from now. And all the tinkrets, the tinsel, the other things that the world tries to throw my way, I can just say, I'm satisfied. Don't need it. I have something far superior, something far better.